What's going on, guys? It's JP from the Double Double, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome.
And today, we're doing a Trends or Dead Ends episode. Obviously, the season is still in its infancy, but some things have been happening, and we're trying to determine whether they're going to continue happening or they're going to stop shortly. First thing, I'm going to open up this episode with some Evan Mobley talk. I know I kind of beat you guys over the head with Evan Mobley talk, and I apologize for that, but after the postseason, I told you guys I wasn't going to tell you how good Evan Mobley was because he was so bad in that first round series. And I haven't done that. I have not done that. I have not told you how good he is. But over the last 2.5 years, I've basically driven the point home that I think he's going to be amazing. So I'm kind of here to say that I'm kind of done with that. I kind of want to see more. I think what's interesting is Cavs fans on Twitter are still super annoyed that people are getting frustrated with Evan Mobley's lack of offensive creation. I don't know how many times me and Ben have to come on this podcast and say, oh, he just needs to shoot more. It's not happening, right? At some point, it's kind of just like, what else can we do? So I'm going to wait until that part. And I don't think you're going to hear a lot about Evan Mobley on this podcast for a while until he proves otherwise. That's kind of just where I want to be with that.
There's a level of offensive dominance that we want to see where it's like he's not taking enough shots. And early in his career, we blamed JB Bickerstaff and we blamed all the shots that everybody else was taking. But if you watch him this year, he's had plenty of opportunities to shoot and he just refuses. Watching him against the Knicks, those back-to-back games, very rough trying to watch him. He just didn't want to create offense for himself. He had no interest in it. That's something that me and you both expected from him, you more so than me, and yet he's still the best defender on one of the best defenses in basketball. He's going to be that year after year. But offensively, I mean, I'm with you. They're just, we got to talk about what we're seeing, and what we're seeing is one awesome game and then a bunch of games where he's just a dude out there.
Yeah, and this isn't taking away from what he is right now, which is one of the best defenders in the entire league at age 22. Like, that in itself is absolutely ridiculous. I always envisioned him as, like, a top 12-7 player in the league, averaging 22-10-5, while also being a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. I'm reeling back those expectations a little bit. I think 22 points seems a little too much for him right now. Over the summer, we had everyone and their mother tell us how, you know, he's going to push the ball off rebounds and, you know, he's ready to be an offensive hub through playmaking. You know, we're not seeing that, right? Yeah. It's all offseason talk.
Yeah, if we're talking about, you know, trends and dead ends, Evan Mobley's offensive struggles, it's a trend. It's something that's going to continue. And a big part of it even isn't him. It's the fact that you brought Max Strus onto this team. We talked about it before the season started. A lot of the shots he could have taken this year are going to go to Max Strus instead. They need that three-point creation a lot more than they need a Mobley mid-range shot. So in terms of the offense, I agree. I think it's a trend that we're going to see him hover around the 15-18 point per game mark.
100%. And I want to make very clear, I want this to be a dead end, but I need to see signs of life. I need to see multiple 20-point games in a row. I need to see that. We have guys like Chet, 5 games into his NBA career, having multiple 20-point games. If Evan Mobley has a 20-point game, I literally stand up and scream at the TV because I'm so excited. Like, this is where I am at this point in my fandom of his. And I just think I put too much pressure, or I had too high of expectations for him, and I'm going to tone them down moving forward. But I do think his offensive struggles are probably a trend, but I'm praying they are a dead end.
I think that's totally fair. Let's move on to a team that I have been very, very happy with. The Orlando Magic are 4-2, and they just beat the hell out of the Lakers last night. Is their success a trend or a dead end? They have the second best defense in the NBA right now. We've talked about their size. How do you feel about where the Magic are at?
This is a trend, man. This is a trend. This team is great. They have a number one option in Paolo Banchero, who he just dominated the Lakers last night. It was so fun to watch. He was hitting some three balls last night, too. Like, off the bounce, step back threes. Super, super impressive stuff from him. This is a trend. I do have concerns about the shooting. I will always have concerns about the shooting. But they just have so much talent everywhere throughout their roster. And I think we've kind of forget about Jonathan Isaac. That dude is an all-world defender. And when he is healthy, he drastically impacts how they play basketball. And Jalen Suggs is a tenacious defender on the perimeter. And Anthony Black got his first start of his career last night, and he looked fantastic, cutting, playing on-ball defense, and just adding a pop of athleticism. So, yeah, this team's going to be really fun all year, and I see a lot of winning in their future.
It's a massive team. They are huge. Franz and Paolo are taller than 6'9 on the wing. Wendell Carter Jr. is 7 feet tall. Anthony Black, if he's a starting guard for the future, he's 6'7". They have the smallest guy being the 6'4", Jalen Suggs, and they're all competent defenders. Of course, the defense is going to be smothering. They have the 18th best offense in the league right now. I think that's even a little bit higher than where I expected them to be, because we talked about just how bad the shooting is. Franz Wagner, they need him to be more of a spacer than he is. He's just not a guy who takes a lot of threes. It's his game is downhill. They don't have a guy, really, whose game is purely perimeter-based, except for Gary Harris, who's been struggling with injuries.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Seeing Jordan Hawkins be really good for the Pelicans has frustrated me greatly as someone who wanted the Orlando Magic to draft him and Grady Dick. Anthony Black, we both liked him a lot. You loved him.
Yeah.
Just in terms of a talent, he is a better player than Grady Dick will ever be. But just the shooting on this squad just looks so good in my head. To have Jet Howard play four total minutes in the season and then Jordan Hawkins stroking it from three for New Orleans, it does frustrate me a little bit. But honestly, man, you're right. They're doing better than they should be considering their spacing, and that's off the back of Franz and Paolo.
They're awesome, man. Franz and Paolo, I mean, I think, you know, could Paolo be an all-star this year? It might be a little bit early just because of the slow start he had, but, you know, he's had a 30-point game already, right? So it's possible that climbs up. Me and you have argued a little bit about whether or not Franz is all-star caliber, and I think I'm just wrong. I think I should go out and say that I'm just wrong about that. Franz Wagner is more than, you know, because I've watched him and I see... You see a guy like Kuzma on the Wizards putting up 20-8, and he's not an all-star. Nobody's going to call him one. And then we see, you know, a 20-6 from Franz, and people get the same picture. Franz is so much younger. He has so much more ability offensively to run an offense and to score on all three levels. This is just a super exciting young team.
Yeah, I'm glad you came around on that. And I do think he is, like, I kept comparing him to Chris Middleton, right? Where he's just like the perfect complementary player for a super megastar for Paolo. I think Paolo is going to be a 25-point-per-game number one scoring option on a team. I think Franz is so good at everything. He just fits perfectly alongside that. I'm glad you're a fan of his now. That team's going to be so fun, dude, and I'm really happy for Orlando fans. I think next year is the year they take the leap into legitimate playoff team, and it's through free agency shooting signings. That's what they need to do.
I think they're looking pretty good for at least a play-in spot this year. I think that was where we had them to start the season. I'm still feeling pretty good about that. They could be an 8 seed. They could be, you know, somewhere in that range. Yeah, man, it's awesome to watch. I want to talk about another team in the East that's really been doing better than people expected. The 76ers are 4-1 and not really struggling without James Harden. And to me, this seems like a trend moving forward. Tyrese Maxey's been a great passer. They picked up some good role players. There's a lot to like with what's going on in Philly right now.
Yeah, man, this team is way better than I thought, and I really enjoy watching them, which is something I couldn't say in the past. I think that James Harden, I've never enjoyed his play style, so I've kind of stayed away from wherever he is. This team's really good, man, and Kelly Oubre's been a really good addition, which is shocking. I said this on live a few days ago. I wish I said it here on the podcast. Ben can be my witness, but every single year, we see a guy that has a certain reputation shed his reputation and become a winning player. We've seen that a lot, right? Back to like the 2019 Lakers, it was Kyle Kuzma. And then we had Andrew Wiggins do it for the Warriors. And then we had Aaron Gordon do it for the Nuggets last year. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but the way Kelly Oubre has been playing so far, I would probably say he's the guy who has a chance to kind of reintroduce himself to the NBA as a winning player. Because I think both of us viewed him as a me guy, black hole player, but he's really impressed me so far, and I thought Daryl Morey did a good job taking a risk with that signing.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up those earlier names, because the way their reputations changed is a little bit different than Oubre, I feel like. All of those guys kind of added a little more well-roundedness to their games in order to be more of an impactful player. Kelly Oubre is just doing what he's always done, man. You put the ball in my hands, I'm shooting that shit. And he's doing it really well. So, you know, when you go from a good bench scorer to a really effective starting scorer, that is an impactful player. It doesn't matter what else you're doing. The fact that he's giving high effort on defense, even if he's not some elite defender, on that plus his scoring is enough to make him a guy that, you know, you kind of want on your lineup.
Yeah, and then just in terms of Tyrese Maxey, I think he's probably the leader for most improved player. Obviously, we're a week and a half, 2 weeks into this. We're doing award talk already. But this guy's averaging 26 points per game on 49% from the floor and 47% from three. And he is completely running the 76ers offense. He looks incredible. And I don't think they're missing James Harden at all, which is a lot. If you don't miss a top 30 player demanding a trade from your team, you've insulated your talent really well.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to give a lot of credit to Tyrese Maxey for stepping up as a playmaker the way that he has. To be at, you know, he had 22 and 10 in his last game against the Suns. The assists are awesome, man. The fact that Joel Embiid's at 6 assists a game is crazy to start the season. That's not a trend that I'm expecting moving forward. But if we somehow, at whatever year we are in Joel Embiid's career, this is year 8, if he somehow just becomes a guy who can handle double teams, and just for the first 7 years he couldn't figure it out, that is another layer added to this team, because that's basically what stops this team year after year into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think if we're talking trends and dead ends, this is a trend that the Sixers are going to be really freaking good all season. And, you know, just how this team has looked in the first week, they have a chance to be the 2 seed over the Bucks. I think the Bucks, we mentioned it, I think, our first episode of the season, there might be some chemistry issues with the Bucks to start off the season. We're seeing that play out in real time, and we'll transition to that after the Sixers talk. But the 76ers look like a well-oiled machine, and I think we forget that this team's kind of been together for a little bit now. You know, Embiid, Maxey, Harris, those dudes have been playing together for a few years at this point, and we're kind of seeing that play through. So I've been very impressed.
Yeah, man, this is going to be a really, really solid regular season team. Let's move on and let's talk about the Bucks defense. Because maybe it's chemistry issues, maybe it's the brand new first-year head coach, but the defense is right now 27th in the NBA. And you still have, you know, a DPOY finalist in Brook Lopez and a DPOY winner in Giannis as your 4 and 5. So where is the shitty defense coming from? It's really the perimeter has been disgusting. The perimeter defense is non-existent. Removing one of the best perimeter defenders in the game and replacing him with a guy that's all offense, there was going to be a curve here. There was going to be a lot to get used to. But I'm surprised at just how bad the paint defense is.
Yeah, this has been pretty shocking to me. I kind of got on here and slandered Brook Lopez last year during the Defensive Player of the Year conversations, just because his contests at the rim were unlike anything we've ever seen in terms of how many shots he contested. But their whole defense was predicated on him standing still in the paint, and then Drew Holiday running around screens on defenders and pressuring them from behind. Now there's not a guy who's doing that. It's people getting free lanes at Brook Lopez over and over and over again. And this has been a kind of a rocky start for the Bucks. I didn't expect it to look this wonky. Like, it just looks weird. And another thing that me and you spoke about, and this is credit to Zach Lowe, me and you spoke about this as, like, one of the most unstoppable plays in the league would be a Giannis Dame pick and roll. They have only run 26 of those plays this entire year. Dame used to run 10 pick and rolls per game with Yusuf Nurkic. Like, this is really weird that they're not using what me and you deem probably the most unstoppable play in the NBA. So yeah, they have some kinks to work out. Talent ends up working out, so they will be a formidable, you know, championship contender at some point in the year, but there's a little bit more to pave it, you know, out here than I thought there was going to be.
Absolutely. And I think personally that a lot of this comes down to the brand new head coach and the lack of insulation. Mike Budenholzer, you know, give him shit for being boring and for not doing much to change any game plan from playoff from, you know, round to round in the playoffs. I think all of that's valid, but he's a guy who knows how to get you wins in the regular season. You know, obviously there's going to be a bit of a struggle here to get over that, to get over the fact that this is a brand new guy. I'm surprised it's just this ugly. You know, I mean, on paper, as guys who have never coached any level of basketball anywhere, thinking, you know, Brook Lopez and Giannis together should be enough to protect the paint. Everything else could be shit, but just leave those two guys to protect the paint. We'll figure out the rest. Obviously, I don't know how to coach professional basketball, but that seems like a winning strategy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been really surprised by this. And, you know, you brought up Adrian Griffin. I'm curious if he'll get the Joe Mazzulla treatment, right? Me and you fucking banged on Joe Mazzulla all last year, especially me. You were actually a fan of his during the regular season. You supported him. I was on his ass all year long, being like, this is a fraud. It's not going to work out. They're not even a title contender because of him, whatever. This year, you know, why are the Bucks and Adrian Griffin getting, you know, preferential treatment? I don't know. I have no idea, because he's a first-time NBA head coach. Title is the expectation, right? And it's looking ugly, right? So I'm curious if Bucks fans turn on him, kind of like how fans in Boston really turned on Joe Mazz. Now, obviously, Joe Mazz has figured things out, but right now, it looks kind of weird for Adrian Griffin.
Yeah, and these losses are bad losses, man. They lost by 19 to Toronto. They lost by 17 to Atlanta. And then all of their wins are close. Nothing about this has been dominant. I expected genuinely from pretty much the opening tip, the offense for this Bucks team to be dominant. I expected an MVP in Giannis next to one of the best point guards in basketball in Dame to be an unstoppable force. And they're just good. You know, there's good moments, but I'm underwhelmed, I'm disappointed, and I will call it a dead end because of the talent that exists on this team, but I'm just shocked at how slow the start is.
Yeah, I'm going dead end here as well. I don't think they're going to be a bottom five defense in the league, but I also don't expect them to be an elite defense. I think this is showing some major holes, and I do think, you know, they're not going to be able to duplicate what they did with Drew Holiday. So probably a dead end. A dead end for the Bucks defense. They'll get better than what they are now, but I still don't think they're going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I want to throw in one that we didn't talk about, but I think is a trend. And I think it's a trend that other people will pick up on as the season continues. Jason Tatum will be in the MVP conversation. The Celtics are an amazing team. They look unstoppable. I could say so much about the Celtics, but I will just talk about Jason Tatum. The team is really good. That's nice. He's still averaging 30 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists a game, and getting it at ease. Played 3 quarters against the Pacers, still managed to put up 30 and 11. It was an off night for him yesterday against the Nets. He still ends up with over 30. Yeah. We're seeing Jason Tatum hit a level that I wasn't expecting him to hit, man. He's taking mid-range shots again. They're good mid-range shots. He's going to be in the MVP conversation.
Yeah, I mean, he looks incredible. And the Celtics look like the best team in the league. I'm still going to give the respect to Denver because they are the champs, but Boston's been playing out of their minds. And I haven't heard his name. I've heard Luka, Curry, and Jokic in the MVP conversations. Rightfully so. All three of those guys are playing unbelievable. But there is this level of best player on the best team, and that's what Jason Tatum probably is. He is cooking right now, and the Celtics are dominating their competition.
We have this talk every year where we get to the halfway point in the regular season and Jason Tatum's efficiency is so much lower than we thought it was. That's not what's happening right now. 55% from the field, 45% from three on over 8 threes a game. If the level of efficiency can reach some level like that. Obviously, he's not sticking close to that. But if he's anywhere close to 50, 40, 90, he's got to be in the top of that conversation. 50, 40, 80, let's say, because he's not a 90% free throw shooter. But if we get to the end of the season, man, and he's around these averages, and the Celtics are a 60-plus win team, he's got to be number one in MVP talks.
Yeah, and it's funny because we look back, and this season's kind of already informing how I want to be as a basketball fan a little bit, especially with Tatum and the Celtics and Evan Mobley and the Cavs. After they flamed out against the Heat in embarrassing fashion, like, I don't care about the Game 7. They got 3-0'd by the Heat when they were the 8th seed. It was embarrassing. Both of us were, like, contemplating breaking up this team. We were like, what the something is, like, very wrong with this squad. Like, fuck this team. Now Tatum's, like, a no-doubt top five guy, 30 points per game, on a team that is a juggernaut, slicing through the East like a hot knife through butter. It's kind of like, in the moment, things seem so important, but, like, I remember in the summer being like, actually, the Celtics might be better in, like, next year or the year after, and now they're just dominating, so it's cool to see Tatum kind of hit this level of he's entering his prime right now.
He is, yes. From what we've seen from Jason Tatum, it's been great so far, but he is, what, 25 years old. This is about when his prime starts. The thing I want to give a lot of credit to, or the thing I just want to point out, is the greatness of having more good coaches on the squad. Sam Cassell joined the squad, and Jason Tatum has given him a lot of credit for empowering him to take more smart mid-range shots. If you compare the shot chart from last year to this year for Jason Tatum, it's night and day, because he's actually taking shots around the restricted area and not just layups and threes or nothing. We saw him get clowned out of taking mid-range shots in his sophomore year. They're slowly getting brought back, and there is a time and a place for it, man. Anybody who thinks you just got to be threes and layups, it's wrong.
Yeah, they don't know basketball. And that's the thing with analytics. I think it's kind of reduced the sport almost to free throws, layups, and threes. Look at Kevin Durant. Look at Kawhi Leonard. Look at Steph Curry. Like, Curry's a guy who's threes, layups, right? But he, because those two areas of his game are such threats, a pump fake at the three and three steps in and for an easy mid-range shot is something he uses a lot. And look at Jokic and Embiid. Both of those guys shoot a ton of mid-range shots. So it's not a shot you want to just abuse over and over again. You need the layups and threes, but to be a three-level scorer is what makes you a top five player, top 10 player in the entire league. So a trend for sure is Tatum being in an MVP conversation.
I agree. I want to let you take control of the next trend or dead end, and it's going to be about Dylan Brooks and the Rockets.
Yeah, this is a weird one. I think, you know, as a community, when that signing was made, we saw 4 years, $80 million after Dylan Brooks embarrassed all of Memphis and the Grizzlies, getting ejected, like leading the league in texts, you know, calling out LeBron. It's just stupid shit. He has been an elite signing for the Houston Rockets, and it feels weird even saying that out loud. But so far this season, he's averaging 18 points per game on 60% from the floor and 60% from three. And this comes along with elite wing defense. Now, Ime Udoka was brought in to change the culture. Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet were brought in to change the culture. It's too early to tell, but at least Houston fans can say, hey, we didn't waste our money. Like, Dylan Brooks is absolutely worth what he's being paid right now.
They didn't waste all their money. They can definitely say that. Fred VanVleet's still on the team and still costs even more. But Dylan Brooks, man, for him to be an efficient three-point shooter and quiet, I think those are the things we needed from Dylan Brooks. You're not on a good team. There is no, you know, waking up bears, whatever the quote is. You're going to be on a dog shit team. Just be good and rehab your career here. And that's what he's doing, man. If this play continues, Dylan Brooks is easily getting another $20 million contract when this one ends. If he can be a guy that can just quietly be a role player that's efficient and play really good wing defense, that's a contract, man. That's an easy contract. It's all of the talking that he was doing that was really making teams want nothing to do with him.
Yeah. And I think it is kind of cool when players take criticism and actually grow from it. We saw him get clowned by everyone. The Memphis Grizzlies, the team itself, put out a statement, there's no circumstance where we bring Dylan Brooks back. Yeah. That is embarrassing. That's wild. I've never seen that before. And then you see him go quiet for a few months. Then he pops up in FIBA basketball after getting his contract, and he's playing incredibly well for Canada. And then he's playing incredibly well for the Rockets. Like, I think he took some legit steps to become a better basketball player, and it's playing out in front of our eyes. So I'm happy for Rockets fans.
And I think just for Dylan Brooks' sake, I mean, just as it's important to say, because he's on a garbage team, the pressure is a lot lower for Dylan Brooks. There's not a lot of pressure for him to do anything except just be efficient. Just put up good stats. At the end of the season, people will have watched maybe 20 minutes of Dylan Brooks on the Houston Rockets. Nobody's going to actually watch these games. Just put up impressive stats and just don't put yourself in the spotlight. And that's how you rehab your image. In that sense, it's a trend. Dylan Brooks, we're going to hate him less. I think 2 years from now, we're going to have a lot less shitty things to say about Dylan Brooks. And it starts with this rehab.
Yeah, I'm also calling this a trend. I've been a kind of pseudo Dylan Brooks defender, which has probably made me look stupid in the last few months. But I'm glad I finally don't look dumb for it. He's kind of making me look semi-smart. So, yeah, happy for Rockets fans and happy for Dylan Brooks for turning things around. A transition I want to make to another trend or dead end is Julius Randle and his relationship with the Knicks and Knicks fans. They hate each other, man. And it's one of those things where Julius Randle is just good enough to deserve to be paid what he is paid and kind of help you win games in the regular season, but is just bad enough where every single game you watch him play, you want to kill this guy. Like, zero effort on defense, constantly rolling his eyes, bitching at the refs, yelling at fans, yelling at coaches. He is one of the most complex players in our league right now. Is this a trend or dead end that his relationship with the Knicks dissolves and Knicks fans continue hating him?
It's both to me. I mean, I think the Julius Randle horror shows are going to be a trend. Through six games, I think he's second worst. He has the second worst field goal percentage of anybody to have taken a similar amount of shots. He's taking 16 shots a game and shooting at 27% from the field, 22.5% from three. It isn't possible to do worse than he's doing. And it's an effort thing, too. I mean, you can find the clips on YouTube of him running pick and stands with Jalen Brunson, where he just fucking stands still during the pick and roll. You can see him not get back on defense. He hates being here, and the fans hate him. I don't see where this goes, because it can't get worse. But how many of these games before they just stop playing him?
Yeah, I don't know, and it's weird because the performance of the Knicks is directly tied to what Randall's done so far. They're 2-4. This is not a team that's supposed to be 2-4. No. When you go down their box scores and look how their players are performing, Jalen Brunson, right back to his old self, absolutely cooking. RJ Barrett's probably played the four best games of his life in concession, right? He's averaging 21 points per game, shooting 43% from three. Emmanuel Quickly playing well again. Quentin Grimes is playing well. Then you have Julius Randle, who is completely altering how this team should look because of how bad he has been on offense, and his effort on defense is abysmal. It's really confusing what they do here, and a question I want to ask you, Ben, is like, what is the solution to this? Because our team's going to want to pick him up from the Knicks? Are they going to want to take that salary on? Like, what is the solution?
I was going to ask you the same question, because I have no idea, man. $28 million owed to Randle this year, $30 million owed to him next year. He's got a player option the year after that for $32 million. You know, who is the team that wants him? And what is his value? What could you possibly get back? There was a sort of conversation about, like, do you do a Randle and Cat swap? But do the Timberwolves want anything to do with Julius Randle? Hell no. there isn't a team in the NBA right now that's itching to take this guy who doesn't like playing basketball and is putting up garbage numbers. I don't know.
And you're right, because this is the confusing part as well, is, you know, for the young teams, they're trying to develop their young players and set good culture. He ruins that.
Yeah.
And then for winning teams, they don't have the salary, and he's not a winning player, so it ruins that. He's in the Russell Westbrook category, where he really needs to evaluate who he is as a basketball player and make some pretty major changes, or else he's in trouble, right? Because we saw Russell Westbrook take a look at his role and change it for the better and become a Clipper and, you know, contribute to winning. But for Julius Randle, if he doesn't alter the way he thinks of himself as a basketball player, like, he might be out of the league after this contract.
He might be out of the league, man. And I'm trying to look around and see what teams would even blow themselves up. And I look at the Chicago Bulls, and DeMar DeRozan's got $28 million attached to his name this year. Maybe there's something that can be done there. That is a team that is waiting to explode. But what does it even look like? How many picks do the Knicks have to give up? What young players are you going to have to ship with them? And what does it even do for your future? It's so interesting because the success of this team is tied to Randle. Like, they need him to be that 25-10 guy for them to have a shot. So maybe they do have to just bite the bullet, send some picks if they have any to give away, and try to get a guy like DeMar, who might be past his prime but still would be an impactful guy.
It sounds silly, but, you know, the Washington Wizards are probably the best place for this guy to land because the Wizards have just made a habit over the last summer of taking on salary, and, you know, they can absorb Randall's salary and send back Denny Avdia, Corey Kispert, and Tyus Jones or something like that and just call it a day.
The Jordan Poole, Julius Randle, Washington Wizards. Oh, my God, that sounds awful.
That guarantees you the number one overall pick. But yeah, man, Julius Randle, it's kind of upsetting because I like seeing the Knicks be a good team. They're a fun – when Madison Square Garden's rocking, it's really cool for the league, and I think he is ruining that to some sense, so that's upsetting to me. So I actually see this being a trend. I don't think he turns it around. I think this gets ugly by the trade deadline.
Yeah, I don't know if Julius Randle will be a New York Knick by the end of the season. I don't know how it would be possible. Let's move on to another team that's really struggling right now. And unfortunately, this just is a trend for the future. The Memphis Grizzlies are the only team in the NBA that has yet to win a basketball game. Yes, they're missing Steven Adams. Yes, they're missing Ja Morant. Yes, Brandon Clark is out. Santi Aldama's missing games. You'd expect them to win one game, right? Yeah. You'd expect them to beat, you know, the Utah Jazz or the Portland Trail Blazers, but this is just not a good basketball team. This is a team that can't really score.
No, man. They are struggling. And it's kind of brought me to an interesting place on how I would view this if I was the GM of the Memphis Grizzlies. Do you make some, like, trade for Rob Williams from Portland and just say, please, God, we need this season to matter. I'll give you 2 first-round picks for Rob Williams. Like, something crazy desperate like that. Or do you kind of lean into this and be like, maybe we could get a lottery pick? Because the West is so deep. And if this is a sign of what's to come for the Memphis Grizzlies without Ja Morant for the next 19 games... like, what is their record in these 25 games that Ja Morant is gone? Is it, you know, 6-19? Is it 7-18? Like, what does this team look like by the time he gets back? And are they too far out of the race at that point? What are your thoughts on just the Grizzlies, like, while Ja's gone?
I'm taking a look at their next couple of games, and I'll show you. So, of the next 5 games, they've got a game against Portland again, Miami, and Utah. In the next 3. If they can't win 1 or 2 of the next 3, they have to be in major panic mode. I agree. Yeah. If they're not, you know, they could come out of this 6-19. That's reasonable. There's not a lot of talent here, man. There's no gems that are going to find their way out of the bench that are going to win you these games offensively. There's just not a lot of creation on this team. Marcus Smart, he's your creator. He's really all you got. And, you know, welcome to that experience, Memphis Grizzlies fans. I really, they could easily be one of the worst teams in basketball this season.
the Memphis Grizzlies, their strategies were Ja Morant creating opportunities for everyone and Steven Adams being the best offensive rebounder in the entire league and getting second opportunities for this team. With both of them gone, their strategies are Marcus Smart Cook, Desmond Bain Cook, and Triple J Cook, and that's just not a winning strategy in the West. It's just not going to work.
No, especially when none of those guys are particularly great at doing that. They're guys who need help being set up. Marcus Smart's got some great passes, man, but just he's not your guy who's going to be this excellent facilitator all year round. He wants to shoot, and you're not going to be happy when he does. Man, this is just not a watchable team. When Steven Adams is back on the floor, it really changes so much for them. When Ja Morant comes back, they'll be worth watching. But it'll be interesting to see what happens if they go, you know, 7-18, 6-19, and Ja Morant comes back and they try to slow his return maybe to get a couple extra losses. It'll be interesting to see what that tank looks like.
And in your eyes, like, how do you view their young talent? Because in my eyes, I think they've just whiffed over and over again.
Yeah, so, I mean, they did a bunch of whiffs, and then they took a bunch of intentionally high-floor, low-ceiling guys. And so now that your top picks didn't work out the way you wanted, you just have high-floor, low-ceiling guys.
Yeah, I remember we did the Zaire Williams draft, and I was a big fan of the selection because my entire theory was they need a wing that can create shots for himself, right? So I like the home run swing because he was widely viewed as like a prospect you would get in the 20s, and they really reached for him at 10, and I was fine with that. He has not panned out the way they needed him to pan out. And then you have guys like Jake LaRavia, you have guys like Kenneth Lofton Jr., David Roddy. All these guys mean nothing, right? None of these guys do anything. So their entire, you know, outlook for their young guys is Zaire Williams needs to become something, and we're on year three now for him. He's playing okay, averaging 11 points per game, 36% from three. That's not bad, but they need more.
They do, man. And, you know, Xavier Tillman was a great defender who was doing some really interesting undersized five stuff, but when you don't have a good insulated team around him, he's not an impressive player. It was really only the fact that they had such top talent with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. playing at their best that those low floor guys really helped make the team what it was. Without the guys on top, the team is just bad. I like David Roddy. That's a small camp of people. I liked the way he shot at Colorado State. To be a big body 6'6 dude shooting 44% from three, that's a guy I'm interested in. He played over 1,000 minutes for the Grizzlies last year as a late first, but he's not great. You know, there's not a lot of reason to root for him. He's not doing very well. There's just not, this is another one of those teams. I think I was tricked at the beginning of the season 3 weeks ago. I said, there's really not a lot of teams that are not entertaining. And maybe I was thinking Steven Adams and Ja Morant helped change that a lot, but this is not an entertaining basketball team.
Yeah, the second you drop Ja Morant on this team, they're a top five watch.
Yeah.
Ja Morant is the most highlight-driven player, basically, other than Wemby. I mean, we see a Ja highlight every night, it feels like, when he's playing basketball. So this team's drastically going to change when he comes back. It's kind of just, do they continue struggling with him gone? I'm going to say yes. I think that's a trend for sure. I think they probably finish up this 25-game skid with an 8-17 record or a 7-19 record?
I think that's definitely reasonable. Another team I kind of wanted to talk about real quick for a trend and dead end. It's so early in the season, but the Atlanta Hawks are 4-2. They've won four straight. DeJounte Murray has looked incredible as a guard defender. Personally, I think you got to give him a lot of credit for that awful Dame Lillard game we saw a couple days ago. They're 4-2. They have a legit coach. They have a bunch of talent. They almost have too much talent at the guard spot. This is a trend. I think this is a trend moving forward. We knew it was going to be one of the Knicks or the Hawks that really stepped up as a team. So far, it's looking like it's the Hawks.
Yeah, man. And this is without AJ Griffin playing a lot. This is with Kobe Bufkin doing nothing. This is Jalen Johnson taking a leap at the forward spot. And that is what has produced this type of, you know, culture for them alongside DeJounte Murray being incredible so far. And their five rotation, to be able to switch between Clint Capela and Onyeka Okongwu and just have an extremely solid center out there at all times is so important for this team, especially with Trae Young throwing up lobs as often as he does. This team, we knew they were going to be good with under Quinn Snyder, and we're seeing that play out.
The fact that we're seeing the field goal percentage from Trae Young, 34.5% from the field, 28% from three, and they're still the third best offense in basketball. Like, you know, I mean, they're awesome. They're really looking good right now. DeJounte Murray is such a perfect star. You need a guy like that next to Trae because of all of Trae's downfalls defensively. You need a guy who's just noodle arms like that, who's going to lock down anybody on the perimeter. It's filthy. He's one of those guys where when you watch his defensive highlights, he just hounds guys for 48 minutes.
Yeah, and in terms of trends and dead ends, this is a trend I feel very confident in. In our over-under episode, I felt comfortable saying the Hawks were going over. And the day the win totals opened up for the NBA, I placed a bet for the Hawks to hit their over. Quinn Snyder, I really trust him as a head coach, and I do think as much shit as we like to give Trae Young, he is an offensive engine in himself. So I'm very comfortable with what I'm seeing right here from the Hawks, and I think this is a trend for sure.
All eight of the regular playing guys in the Hawks, there's eight guys who play over 20 minutes a game. They're all averaging double-digit points. That is not because of them. That is Trae Young. That is what he does as an offensive hub. Even if he is unable to put the ball in the basket, he sets up other guys better than almost anybody else in the league. And also, the three-point shooting of Sadiq Bey has been huge. DeAndre Hunter being healthy. In all the games he's healthy, he does great. Jalen Johnson shooting well on limited attempts from three. They needed that. That's what they needed to be a great offense, is somebody else in the team hitting threes.
And they've suddenly become deep at the wing. And that's important, too. Like, Jalen Johnson's growth means a lot for them. And for them to get Sadiq Bey for a bag of chips from the Pistons looks really weird now. Mm-hmm. The Pistons got rid of him just because they didn't feel like paying him. And now he's, like, a quality role player for a team who's going to make a playoff push. That looks like a Troy Weaver miss.
Yes.
Like you said, DeAndre Hunter, Sadiq Bey, AJ Griffin hasn't even started playing well yet. Wait until he starts playing well. And Jalen Johnson, like, this team's legit. I'm very comfortable saying they're going to be pretty good.
Kobe Bufkin's a guy that me and you both kind of felt like was an all-rookie level player. And he's only played 4 minutes so far. Obviously, there's going to have to be injuries for him to really step up and get a big-time role. That's a bummer. I'm not entirely sure why they drafted Kobe Bufkin. Just because I wanted to see him play, but just the depth that they have at the wing and the guard spot is awesome. And you already mentioned the fact that Clint Capela and Onyeka Okongwu, it's the perfect center duo to switch between.
Yeah, I think the Bufkin pick was just best player available at that point in the draft, which I'm totally comfortable with that strategy. Usually that works out for the best. But as selfishly as a guy who was rooting for him, I'd definitely like to see him play more. I got one more to throw out here for trends and dead ends. The Golden State Warriors, they have been cooking. Steph Curry's been incredible. They're 5-1. They've won a lot of close games. And some might say that's luck, and some might say that's championship experience. Do they continue being a top three seed in the West? Like, are they just going to be this dominant throughout the season?
We get to this point every year where we kind of ask ourselves, like, is Steph Curry better than he was last year? and that's kind of how I felt for a little bit to start the season. He's, again, being insane. 31 points a game, 47% from three on 11.5 threes a game. As long as he's healthy and leading your team, the team obviously can accomplish anything. Klay Thompson hasn't been incredible. He's been shooting threes, doing what Klay always does, but nothing outstanding, nothing incredible. Really been just Steph Curry and whatever else can be scrounged up from the rest of the team.
And I'm going to buck you a little bit on the Klay Thompson thing. I think he's been incredible just for the fact that he's only taking 13 shots a game. Me and you were upset last year because he was taking 22 shots a game and shooting 40% from the floor. And that frustrated the fuck out of me because it felt like he took them out of games by himself.
Yeah.
there's clearly been a change in awareness to what he is as a basketball player, and he's doing what he's doing on hyper efficiency. He's shooting 48% from the floor, 43% from three, and this is a guy that can catch fire any night. Jonathan Kuminga looks the best he's looked in his career up to this point. Andrew Wiggins is playing for them again. Draymond Green is always going to give you defensive, you know, excellence. And then Chris Paul, who's done about as horrible as a job scoring as possible, is averaging 9 assists to 1 turnover.
Yes.
So,
and Chris Paul is also one of the leaders in the NBA right now in plus minus. So, you know, he's too old to put the ball in the hoop, and it doesn't matter at all because of how perfectly he sets up everybody else. You're right in the sense, I mean, the sense that Klay Thompson's taking less shots and that's good for the team. Absolutely. He deserves some credit there. I'm really happy with what I've seen from the Warriors. It sucks that we're kind of at this point. It might be just a Debbie Downer thing to say, but Steph Curry is an injury prone player. So as long as he's healthy and playing games, this team is dominant. But if he misses a 10 to 12 game stretch, the team's right back in the doghouse.
Which he will.
Yeah.
He will miss 10 to 12 games in one full stretch at some point in this season. It's happened the last three seasons. I spoke to you about that over the playoffs, where this is just, we have to start talking about him the same way we talk about Kawhi or LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will just miss a chunk of games for whatever reason. But I think they're better insulated for that now with Chris Paul. You know, how bad do you feel having Chris Paul run the show for a 5 to 7 game stretch? You feel better than Jordan Poole doing it, that's for sure. So what do you think? Is this a trend or a dead end that the Warriors remain like a top three seed in the West?
Honestly, I want to say it's a trend. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if we got to the end of the season and the Warriors are still a home court advantage team. There is never going to be any chemistry issues. It almost seems like, I mean, it doesn't almost seem like, the chemistry is better than it was last year. We've talked about this in private to death. I will never get over how Jordan Poole was punched in the face with maximum force and everybody was mad at the guy who leaked the video. That's the only person that they're mad at. Everybody had shit to say about Jordan Poole on the way out. We're glad you're gone. Every single person, the coach, Steph Curry, everybody. Vibes are so much better now that he's off the team.
Yeah.
Maybe they are better insulated with Steph Curry out to just not completely fumble.
Yeah, and Draymond, and you know, obviously he's the assault. You know, he's the guy who committed the assault.
Yeah.
But in a press conference the other night, he straight up said, coming to work last year was not fun at all. Everyone didn't want to be here in the building. This year, we're all excited to be back and we're ready to win games. When you have players vocalizing that they didn't have fun last season, and you have coaches saying it, you know, they're excited to play basketball, man. And you can see it on the court, and the talent is shining through, obviously, with Steph Curry. Like, I think this team's dangerous.
I think this team's dangerous, too, man. I mean, I think the Nuggets are still the team to beat in the West, but with Steph Curry on your team, anything can happen.
Absolutely.
I think that'll do it for me. I've got no more trends or dead ends. What about you?
I'm going to try to squeeze a Wemby one in here before we go. Will we see another 40-point, like, close to 40-point outing from Wemby in the next week?
In the next week? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Because
how consistent is this about to become?
I think he's going to be 20, 24 points every single night. I think he's just going to be consistently at that level. The fact that he has already hit, but it was like 38 and however many boards he got. We're going to see ridiculous shit from Wemby this year. I think in the next week, I'm going to say no to a 40-point game.
Okay. I think I'm going to say yes, because it looked like in that Phoenix game, something clicked for the Spurs where they realized, oh, we have like a guy that can just close games for us. Like they gave him the ball every possession and just said, go get us a bucket.
The play where you throw the ball somewhere in the vicinity of the hoop and Victor Wembanyama gets it and scores it. It's a fucking unbeatable play.
Absolutely. And I also think, you know, I think I said it on the podcast or on live. I forget where I said it. But my boldest prediction that I kind of believed this year was Victor Wembanyama making All-NBA. Like, I'm kind of still on board with I'm kind of still on board with that. Like, what he's doing right now is so stupid. I just think he's incredible. He's one of my favorite watches in the league. He's so worth just tuning into. I think it's a trend that he puts up weird performances like this in the next week. Like, I think we're going to see another 30 to 40 point game from him in the next week.
I think the trend that I'm expecting moving forward, in a trend that I wasn't expecting, the Spurs are just fun to watch every single night. I was definitely worried about the lack of talent for anybody that's not Victor Wembanyama. It doesn't matter, man, with how good he is and with the fact that they understand the strategy, the team understands what the strategy is. They're an entertaining team every single night, and that is a trend.
Yeah, and he's only taken 15 shots per game right now, and he's averaging 20 points per game. This isn't a guy who's, like, monopolizing the offense the entire game. That is not what's happening. Like, his teammates are getting a fair share. They're passing the ball. The Spurs culture has definitely been instilled into Victor already.
The Trey Jones and Victor Wembanyama duo
is, like, legit good.
Yes, already.
Yeah, man. If you're a basketball fan, you have to just watch the Spurs for entertainment value alone.
Victor Wembanyama, right now, his on-off numbers, he is a plus 24.3 for a team that is a little bit under five. No, they're 3-2. They're 3-2. They got the crap beat out of him in game 3, and he's still a plus 24.3.
Here's the trend or dead end. Are the Spurs gonna continue being in the play-in race? Because right now, they're in the play-in race. Is that a thing that you can see actually playing out this way, or is that just silly because Phoenix is struggling and Memphis has struggled?
So if you remember 4 years ago with DeMar DeRozan, they were a 6 seed at the All-Star break. I think we're going to see that shit again. I think we are going to see that again. I don't know if we're going to see the downhill spiral that happens afterwards, but when you've got Greg Popovich and you've got at least one incredible player, they will find a way to win games, man.
And I don't know where I said this shit. I'm getting my lives and podcasts mixed up, but I said he's a top 25 player in the league already. I don't know where I said that. Like, I went through the Ringer's top 100, and I just kind of picked out players on who I would want over him. And it took me to, like, 25. He's slowly climbing to, like, a top 20 player already in the league, which is insane.
Yeah.
5-6 games into his career, I'm comfortable saying, like, he's straight up better than Domantas Sabonis. Like, I'm cool saying that. That is insane.
It's hard to fight you on it that much, man. He is incredible. And we're only going to see more greatness from him. 40 points. I don't know if we're going to see that from him again, but I'm surprised he already hit 38 against the Suns, man.
Sorry, I keep going on about Wemby. He's just so fun to talk about. Is he a top 5 watch for you in the league right now? Like, are you just completely enamored? And, like, is he a top 5 favorite player to watch at this point?
I think if you're someone... Yeah. I will say that. I don't think you have to be a basketball super fan to appreciate a dude who is, you know, alien-sized. You saw that dunk he had on a fast break where, like, He looks like he's standing, and his head is above the rim, and he's doing those, just all of the pictures that come out. It's like when you saw Bol Bol in a swimming pool, or in that pool.
They're
that ridiculous. Just everything that Wemby does.
Yeah, and to close the podcast, the Ringer has a trade value chart where, like, how valuable players are to Victor's 4th in the league, only behind Luka, Giannis, and Jokic. And that feels right.
Yeah.
Like, every other player, like the Tatums, the Kawhis, you know, all these guys, like what Victor is doing right now at 19, he's going to be the best player in the league by like year 4.
Yes.
It's going to be insane.
The thing that I'm the happiest about is with every single young player, there are people who are just determined to be haters and who are just determined to not believe in them. Victor Wembanyama might have shut them up by game 4.
Right. He, like, not even a full season. Right. It was just like game 4, stop. I'm that guy.
Yes. He's incredible.
But yeah, it's been so fun to watch, and I encourage all of our listeners to definitely take a peek at a Spurs game in the near future.
3:30. There's one going on today. Must watch. Yeah.
Tune in.
I think that's gonna be it for me. JP, you got anything else?
Nothing for me.
Awesome. Talk to you all later. Peace out.
Peace.